Hello, this is Lincoln reading for you the Iroquois County Times-Republic for Thursday, May the 14th. Terry Lynch presents Paul Revere, Fight for the Right to be Free by Kim Rabe for the Times-Republic. Terry Lynch, a nationally known actor who specializes in historical portrayals, performed as Paul Revere and presented Paul Revere, Fight for the Right to be Free, at the Old Courthouse Museum recently. His portrayal of Paul Revere is the second of an America 250th program to be given at the museum this year. A third program, Uncle Sam Wants You to Remember the Women of Independence, will take place in the courtroom at 1:30 p.m. Sunday, November 1st. Lynch portrayed George Washington in a program in March when he presented George Washington, Battle for Independence. The program was sponsored by Iroquois County Historical Society, a nonprofit organization which is in charge of keeping the museum open to the public. The museum is filled with various displays representing several communities throughout the county. Paul Revere learned the craftsmanship of silversmithing from his father in the Boston, Massachusetts area. If you wanted quality silversmithing, you went to Revere. They created their own coat of arms to indicate their own style of silversmithing. He hobnobbed with many of the upstanding citizens of Boston. Most colonists came to the New World on business, but others came because the King of England gave them land instead of paying the debts he owed them. After the French and Indian War, things were difficult in the colonies. The king had won the war, but there were debts to pay off, and the colonists were upset with him because they risked their lives to win that war. The king was finding ways to pay off his debts through the colonists. They had no say in the rules, laws, and taxes he was imposing upon them. Soon, a group of men start to talk on a regular basis, and these conversations would be considered treason. Questioning anything the king does is treason. And if you are charged with treason, you would be shipped to London to stand trial, where you are responsible paying for your own imprisonment. Ben Franklin is trying to represent the colonies, but that isn't going well. Revere is balanced on both sides of the fence, as he is an artisan who deals with the wealthy, and he is a colonist who can speak about their situation. The group of men, which include Revere, became known as the Sons of Liberty. Wishing to liberate the New World on behalf of the Crown, a specific part of the Sons of Liberty was known as the mechanics, people who fix things, not because they are broken, but fixed so the colonists will see the Sons of Liberty's point of view. The mechanics will create situations so it looks like England and the British, including the military and politicians, threw the first punch. The mechanics really wanted to fight, but they wanted it to look like the British were starting fights with the colonists. Meetings took place in two places. One, publicly, a 150-year-old elm tree, which became known as the Liberty Tree, and two, privately, the Green Dragon Tap. It is at the Green Dragon Tap where the spy ring will form. If one member of the spy ring should be questioned, he would only know one or two people. This made it so members weren't aware of each other, and thus not much information could be spread about the ring or its members. Here the Culper Ring would form, led by George Washington. Revere would be one of the first to get on board for the fight for independence. The biggest problem facing the Sons of Liberty: can this small group of colonists defeat the strongest nation in the world? They had no navy, not even real soldiers. So how would they convince others to take their side? This is where Revere came in. He would take certain situations and then slant the view to be in favor of the colonists. He would omit certain details. One way the group enticed colonists to their line of thinking was tar and feathering, which involved a cauldron of hot tar and a bag or several of feathers. First, the colonist, not agreeing with the views of the Sons of Liberty, would be warned not to side with the crown. Then, if he didn't throw support to the group, he would usually be taken to a public place, held by some of the mechanics, and stripped of their clothing. If the one who heated the tar was good at his job, the tar would be hot enough to inflict pain and cause scarring, but not hot enough to cause death. One thing the colonists were against was the Stamp Act. Whatever the parchments or purchases you had, receipts had to be written for the transactions. Letter writing and print documentations would have to have a stamp on them, and the only way to get a stamp was to pay a tax. This tax was on things which had already been taxed, so the group was strongly against this double taxation. The governor of Massachusetts assigned a clerk to announce the tax and then start collecting it. The day before the tax was set to begin, an unstamped letter was sent to the clerk suggesting he retire from the position. He had until 12 noon the next day to decide, and he was encouraged to meet under the Liberty Tree to announce his decision. Knowing he had to show, he got to the Liberty Tree and saw over 300 people carrying guns, clubs, sickles, pitchforks, axes, etc. Additionally, there is a cauldron of tar and a barrel of feathers. The clerk decides on the spot he is too old for the position and retires. John Hancock is a profitable businessman, having many ships going into and out of the Boston Harbor. A customs agent watches the ships and documents everything coming and going because it all has to be taxed. At any given time, Hancock may have 9 ships which need to be documented. Everything is on the up and up, and all is verified. His ships are generally half full or half empty, and yet he still makes a profit. Is there an agreement between the Massachusetts governor, the customs agent, and Hancock? Since the Stamp Act was repealed, taxes were put on everything else. And the one thing everyone loved was tea. Hancock had several ships in the harbor with tea. It would be devastating if something happened to the tea and it wasn't insured. Hancock's ships were insured, which meant the tea on board was secured. One night, quote, savage Indians, unquote, the same ones harassing the colonists, boarded a ship, took the keys from the guard, broke into the hull, and tossed all the tea into the harbor. Surprisingly, the ship was not damaged. Thus the Boston Tea Party. Supposedly, a group of men dressed like Indians paraded down Main Street to the harbor, went up to the officer in charge, asked for and received the keys, stepped aside and formed a line, unloaded the hull and tossed the tea into the harbor, then went to the officer and asked for a broom, swept the deck to appear clean and undisturbed, then shut and locked the hatch, returned the key to the officer, and left. When this version came out, the Boston Tea Party moniker stayed in place. Some colonists realized they may have recognized some of those portraying Indians. One was identified as John Hancock, another as Sam Adams, and a third as Paul Revere. The Sons of Liberty and mechanics did indeed perform this stunt to protect the tax and aimed to send a message to the king to stop taxing tea. It also cemented protest the tax, excuse me. It also cemented the fact the soldiers had not been sent to Boston to protect colonists from the Indians. Tea was still taxed, however, so a couple of women came up with the idea to switch to coffee, which wasn't taxed. Huh. Taxes were also imposed on glassware, so members of the Sons of Liberty threatened proprietors to stop selling it, as this was money being sent back to the king. Glassware increased in price as the proprietors passed on the tax cost to consumers. Thus, glassware wasn't affordable to colonists and was purchased by the wealthy. Since Sons of Liberty wasn't sure of the quality of the glassware, they decided to check it out, but couldn't do so during the day. They went to a shop at night. When no one answered their knock, they broke out a window, which damaged some of the glassware. After bumbling around the shop in the dark, it was discovered almost all the glassware had been destroyed. Part of the Culper spy ring was made up of women. These women were around when officers would speak freely in front of them in hotels, taverns, homes, etc. The women would then send messages to the Sons of Liberty alerting them of the soldiers' invasion on Boston. The North Church was visible, so it was decided to place lanterns there. One lantern if the soldiers were coming by land, two lanterns if they were coming by sea, and three lanterns if they were coming by land and sea. These soldiers were basically looking for John Hancock and Sam Adams, but they weren't sure about Paul Revere. On their way, the group Revere was in stopped at a tavern just as William Dawes and Samuel Prescott came out. They meet a band of soldiers who recognize Revere. In the meantime, Dawes jumps his horse over a hedge, but he falls off and sprains his ankle. Prescott's horse jumps the hedge, so he heads to Lexington and is actually the only one who ends up completing the journey to Lexington, then on to Concord to warn the colonists to arm themselves. Revere is about to be arrested, but the soldiers hear gunfire in Lexington and head that way since they know where Revere can be found. Revere never makes it any further. He heads back to Boston, and 60 years later he becomes the hero when a poet writes the poem of the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. Why was Revere made the hero when it was actually Prescott and Dawes? It is thought all the stories and propaganda Revere wrote made him look as if he did more during the Revolution than he actually did. Revere was tried for cowardice and dishonorably discharged from the military. After the Revolution, it was discovered he hadn't retreated in cowardice, but was in actuality trying to remuster his men. Later, he would build cannons and designed a way to roll copper. He became a hero of sorts because he manufactured the copper that would line old Ironsides on the USS Constitution. Yes, it was copper, not iron. Revere would live to be 83 years old and fathered 16 children with two wives, Sarah and Rachel. ICHS has a Facebook page. For more information on ICHS, membership in ICHS, or ways to donate or loan items to the museum, call 815-432-2215 during the business hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. The museum is open the first non-holiday Sunday of each month from 1 to 4 p.m. Tours are most welcome, and those can be arranged through office personnel. Run for the wall. Sandbox Route to Stop in Watsika by Carla Waters, Managing Editor. The Sandbox Route unit for the annual Run for the Wall event will again stop in Watsika. The event will be May 26th and includes hundreds of motorcyclists participating in the ride from Washington, D.C. to Marseille for ceremonies at the Middle East Conflicts Wall. For several years now, the ride has included a stop in Watsika, where the riders get lunch at the American Legion Post 23 in Legion Park. After lunch, the riders conduct the Sandbox Route Recognitions Program before heading back on the road toward Marseille. Before they break for lunch, the riders stop at Casey's in Watsika to refuel. The May 22nd through 26th event will be the fifth one for the Sandbox Route and the 36th for the Run for the Wall. The mission is to promote healing for all veterans, families, and friends. It also is to call for an accounting of all prisoners of war and missing in action, honors those killed in action in all wars, and supports military personnel wherever they are serving. According to information from the organizers, the event gives riders a safe, supportive, and private atmosphere in which all participants can reflect and heal on their journey to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., and the Middle East Conflicts Wall Memorial in Marseille, in the hope they can return home to a new beginning. There are three other routes besides the Sandbox: Central, Midway, and Southern. The total riders and participants so far for the event is almost 1,000 riders, with the Sandbox Route currently at 292, according to website information. The Run for the Wall ride goes from May 13th through the 23rd, with Sandbox Route going from May 24th through May 26th. A person does not need to be a veteran to ride. According to information from the organization, people can also support in a lot of ways, including making a donation, purchasing RFTW merchandise at shop.rftw.us, lining the streets and showing support as they pass through the town, and also registering to ride with them. Turning Point Energy donation powers support for local survivors. Dateline Kankakee, Illinois, May 11th, 2026. Clove Alliance is proud to announce a generous donation from Turning Point Energy, a community solar developer with active projects in Kankakee County. This meaningful contribution will help expand access to critical services for survivors of sexual violence across Kankakee, Iroquois, and Ford counties, according to information from the organization. Turning Point Energy's investment reflects a commitment not only to clean energy but also to the well-being of the communities where it operates. By supporting local organizations like Clove Alliance, the company is helping ensure that survivors have access to free, confidential advocacy, counseling, and resources when they need them most. On behalf of everyone at Clove Alliance, we are deeply grateful to Turning Point Energy for their generous support, said Tracy No, CEO of Clove Alliance. Partnerships like this allow us to continue providing compassionate services and reaching more survivors in our community. Their commitment to being an engaged community partner makes a meaningful difference. Clove Alliance provides a 24/7 crisis hotline, advocacy in legal and medical settings, specialized counseling, and prevention education. These services are offered at no cost, ensuring that financial barriers never stand in the way of support. Last year, they served 627 survivors and their loved ones, and donations from community partners are essential in sustaining and expanding this work. Turning Point Energy integrates community giving into every project it develops, focusing on organizations that address locally identified needs. To date, the company and its partners have contributed more than $4.2 million to nonprofit organizations. We believe our responsibility in Illinois goes beyond delivering clean energy. It includes supporting organizations that strengthen the fabric of energy, that strengthen the fabric of local communities, said Salar Nainai, president of Turning Point Energy. Clove Alliance provides vital services for survivors across the area, and we're proud to support their work and the positive impact they make every day. Support from partners like Turning Point Energy plays an especially critical role in ensuring survivors are not alone. Donations allow Clove Alliance to fill funding gaps and put money into services that need it most. Community members, businesses, and organizations are encouraged to join in this effort to create safer, more supportive communities. We all have a role to play in supporting survivors and preventing sexual violence, No added. Whether through donations, volunteering, or simply learning more, every action helps us move closer to a community where everyone feels safe and supported. To learn more about Clove Alliance's services or to get involved, visit www.clovealliance.org or contact the organization at 815-932-7273. Iroquois Home Health receives 5-star patient survey rating from Medicare. Dateline Watsika. Iroquois Home Health has received a 5-star patient survey rating from Medicare, recognizing the agency's commitment to providing compassionate, high-quality care to patients and families throughout the region. According to information provided, the rating reflects patient survey results from the fourth quarter of 2025 and is part of Medicare's quarterly star rating system. Iroquois Home Health has earned 5-star status for several quarters over the past few years, an achievement that remains unique among home health agencies in the local area. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services uses star ratings through Care Compare to help patients and families evaluate health care providers. CMS reports two types of home health star ratings: quality of patient care star ratings and patient survey star ratings. Patient survey star ratings are based on the home health consumer assessment of healthcare providers and systems survey, also known as the HHCAHPS survey. The survey asks current or recently discharged home health patients or their family members or friends about their experience with a home health agency, including communication, care, and whether they would recommend the agency to others. This rating reflects the trust our patients and families place in us during an important time in their care, said Angela Potts, RN, clinical supervisor. When we are invited into a patient's home, we take that responsibility seriously. Whether we are helping someone recover after surgery, manage a chronic illness, or regain independence, our goal is always to provide compassionate, quality care that improves quality of life. Iroquois Home Health's staff includes 4 registered nurses, 4 certified nursing assistants shared with hospice, 2 office staff members, and 1 director. The agency also works with 1 physical therapist, 1 physical therapist assistant, and 1 occupational therapist from the outpatient clinic when available. Together, the team represents 159 cumulative years of dedicated service to Iroquois Memorial Hospital. Iroquois Home Health has cared for patients and families for more than 25 years, serving Iroquois and Ford counties, as well as portions of Livingston and Vermilion counties. The team provides skilled nursing, therapy, home health aid, and medical social work services to help patients recover, manage chronic illnesses, and remain safely at home. For more information about Iroquois Home Health, call 815-432-6175. Illinois Department of Agriculture offering free recycling program for agrochemical containers. Dateline Springfield. The Illinois Department of Agriculture encourages farmers and agricultural facilities to take part in a free agrochemical container recycling program. Beginning in the middle of July and continuing into August, sites throughout the state will collect containers that are recycled to make shipping pallets, according to information from the department. Each year, this program gives farmers and agrochemical facilities an easy way to responsibly dispose of empty pesticide containers, said IDOA Director Jerry Costello II. Instead of ending up in the trash, these containers can be brought to a nearby collection site and handled the right way. Metal and household pesticide containers are not eligible for the recycling program. Collection sites will accept only high-density polyethylene number 2 plastic agrochemical containers that are clean and dry. Participants are responsible for rinsing them and removing all caps, valves, metal labels, booklets, and foil seals. Participants are also responsible for cutting off the top and bottom of plastic drums and cutting off the side of the drum from top to bottom. Mini bulk and intermediate bulk containers can be recycled via the department's container recycling program by making the following container preparations. Mini bulk cage containers are required to be cut into separate top, bottom, and sides. Fittings discarded, no metal, no wood. 6 slabs of plastic. Intermediate bulk containers are to be cut into 1-foot square pieces. Fittings discarded, no metal, no wood. G. Phillips & Sons, LLC, is offering services to pick up mini bulk and intermediate bulk containers throughout the year. Call 678-232-6047 to learn more about their mini bulk and intermediate bulk container collection service. The program is a cooperative venture between the Illinois Department of Agriculture, Agriculture Container Recycling Council, GrowMark Incorporated, Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association, G. Phillips & Sons, LLC, Illinois Farm Bureau, and University of Illinois Extension. To obtain a free brochure about the program, call the Illinois Department of Agriculture's free toll-free line at 1-800-641-3934. A one-day collection site will be at Heritage FS Incorporated in Gilman from 1 to 3 p.m. July 23rd. Contact person is Chris King at 815-707-7020. A one-day collection site will be at Shabans Ag in Cubans from Shabans, maybe, I don't know, from 9 to 11 a.m. July 31st. Contact person is Dean Schaffer at 815-452-2377. Again, this is Lincoln, and I've been reading for you the Iroquois County Times-Republic for Thursday, May 14th, 2026. Have a fabulous day.